Hello, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Joshua P. Warren Daily. Well, I've got some more interesting content for you today, but first I want to follow up on the experiment that I talked about in my last podcast, where we can all work together using ESP exercises to see if we can win a lot of money on roulette here in Las Vegas. And I was just amazed by the amount of positive feedback that I received from that podcast. Tons of emails, Twitter messages, Facebook messages from really enthusiastic people, and most of them were saying, "Hey, count me in. I want to do this. I want to be involved. What do I need to do?" And I'm delighted by the excitement, but I want to reiterate, you don't need to do anything to sign up or to let me know that you want to be a part of it. It's going to be very simple when I'm ready to start this experiment, which will probably be in 2 or 3 weeks. And of course, this experiment will go through multiple phases. What I will do is give you a podcast and say, okay, I'm ready and I have a link for you to visit. And I'll tell you how to go to the link. And then when you get there, you will have the option of picking red or black or green. And I will put right there, I am going to go at this time on this date to this location. I'm not going to tell you exactly what location. I'm presuming it'll be here in Las Vegas, but maybe not. You know, I do travel. But I'll say I'm going to be at this location, this city, at this date, at this time, and I'm going to bet one time on a roulette wheel. What color do you think it's going to be? And then it'll be like a survey. You don't have to sign up or register or anything like that. You just click a button, and then I'm going to look at the results before I go that day, and I'll see who's right. And then I'll say, okay, if you got that one right, here's how we're going to proceed. And I'll give you phase two, and we'll take it from there. So the best thing you can do to be a part of this is to listen to this podcast on a regular basis, which, you know, I try to do one every day. And you must also sign up for my free e-newsletter at joshuapwarren.com. Now, of course, I hope in the meantime, before I announce this, that you will start practicing your abilities. And, you know, I'd said before, it's as simple as tossing a coin and seeing how good you get at predicting if it's heads or tails, or pulling a card out of a deck and seeing how good you get at predicting if it's going to be red or black, or rolling a die, trying to predict the number. And there are also some things that you can do online or in apps, because obviously if you're on a subway or you're sitting in a waiting room at the doctor's office, you're not going to be wanting to flip a coin around. So there are ways you can use your cell phone to get a little practice in. If you go to a website called random.org, there is an interesting little random number generator right there at the top. And you can enter numbers, like a range of numbers. Like you could put in minimum of 1 or maximum of 100, or a minimum of 1 and maximum of 3. And then you hit the button, and it's like a little calculator, and it just generates one of those numbers in that range randomly. So, for example, here with roulette, you've got three variables, red, black, or green. So you might just go in here and say, well, let's have a minimum of 1, maximum of 3. Then you look and you're like, okay, psychically, I think it's going to be a 2. And then you hit the generate button and you see if it comes up with a 2. Now, that's you know, better than nothing, but I do think for this experiment, you're going to be better off if you try to stick with physical things, like a coin or a deck of cards or a die or something along those lines. And that's because that ultimately I'm going to be using a physical roulette wheel for the experiment. So this is going to be a mechanical process where I'll go up to a table where there's a live dealer and there's a nice big physical table there. And yes, you know, there are electronic versions of roulette out there, but I don't trust them, to be honest with you. I think that, you know, everything's going to be as above board as possible if you are there on a properly calibrated physical roulette wheel. So the main thing you should be doing for now is just on your own practicing so that when I announce that I'm ready for your participation, you will be ready to go. Now, of course, I mentioned that there is supposedly this time of day, once a day, when it is theorized that your psychic ability may be boosted by up to 400%, and that is when your position on Earth aligns with the center of the galaxy. And so a number of people have said, now how do I find that information again? Well, you can get on the internet and you can look in a lot of different ways, but the lady, Jennifer, who told me about this to begin with, she said the best app that she uses is this one that I also downloaded. If you just go to Google Play and you do a search for Sidereal Time App, Sidereal is one word, S-I-D-E-R-E-A-L, Sidereal Time App. The first thing that comes up is this app that, you know, it shows you the sun and you see all the planets orbiting around it, and it says Sidereal. And to make this easy for you, if you go to my Twitter account, Joshua P. Warren, at Joshua P. Warren, I put a link there. You'll find it in one of my recent threads with a screenshot of this app. So I told you I'm getting ready for a trip and everything, and I'm really busy. So I asked Lauren if she would look up this app and do some research on, you know, when these times are going to be, when at my location where I am right now here in Vegas, I'll be aligned with the center of the galaxy. So Lauren, she downloaded this app, and then she said she saw to open up all the features, I think she said it was $4.99, so I didn't know that you had to pay that, but and I'm not selling this, and I'm not making any money off of it, but fine, okay. You know, nothing really in life is free, because if you don't pay for something, well, then you got to put up with a bunch of annoying commercials and ads and stuff, right? So we were like, fine, all right. So we paid $4.99, and then she was able to put in our, I think she said our latitude and longitude, because I haven't had a chance to use this yet. And then it generates a schedule that shows you what your time is going to be for whatever upcoming range of dates that you want. So, for example, she sent me this range. So, according to the app, where I am right here in Las Vegas, tomorrow morning, I am going to be aligned with the center of the galaxy at 8:02 a.m. Now, I don't know if I'm going to be awake at 8:02 a.m. because my schedule is pretty wacky and unpredictable. But if I am, then I will definitely, at 8:02 a.m., I will do an experiment here at my house. So I'll flip a coin and I'll see, you know, I'll flip it 10 times and see how many times I get it right. Or, you know, or one of the exercises that I told you to do. And again, I don't know exactly how long this alignment is supposed to last for you. I'm imagining, you know, maybe a minute or two. It reminds me of how when you watch a sunset, you know, you have a little window right there when everything looks beautiful and then it's over. So, so that's what I would do, like, tomorrow if I'm up at 8:02 a.m., I'll do a little experiment here at my house. The next day, it's going to be 7:58 a.m. The next day, it's going to be 7:54 a.m. So what you see is that every single day, it seems to be 4 minutes earlier than the previous day. So, like, I've got the times going all the way up here till January 4th. of 2019, and on January 4th, it'll be at 6:16 a.m. So it's going to vary based upon where you are on Earth, but this app apparently makes it very, very easy for you. And so if you want to use that method, again, I suggest that you just go to my Twitter feed, and you'll find a link there. Or you can get on the internet and you can, you know, look for other ways of getting your relationship in what is known as side real time to the center of the galaxy. Basically, the time you're looking for, I believe, is 1330 local side real time. So whatever 1330 is going to be for your position, that's the time that you're going to be looking for. So hopefully that clarifies a few things for you. And but hey, you don't have to do the part of the experiment where you're trying to find the side real time. If you're just exercising these variables over the next couple of weeks, then it will definitely help you when it comes to our roulette experiment, which will, if it works, it will result in at least 10 people getting $1 million or thereabouts. You got to include taxes. So, okay. So that said, one of the things that's so interesting about this experiment is that we are talking about the relationship between you as a little ant crawling around on the surface of this planet and your potential relationship to the rest of the cosmos. You know, what's happening out there in this unimaginably huge model makeup of reality. And, you know, I've always talked about how little we really know about what's out there and how it all works, and how that if you talk to the smartest cosmologist and astrophysicist in the world, they will tell you that over 95% of what we are able to observe out there using the most expensive equipment, we call dark matter and or dark energy, which is defined by the very fact that we have no idea what it is. So if we don't know what 95% of everything we can observe is, we may as well just say we don't know what the hell it is. I mean, if I were to hand you a glass of liquid and say, drink this, and you say, what is it? And I say, well, 5% of it is apple juice. And you say, okay, well, what's the other 95%? And I say, I don't know. Would you drink it? Probably not. That's the meaningful part, the 95%. So that's why it created a bit of a stir a couple days ago when a story came out about a new theory regarding what dark matter and dark energy may be. And actually, I believe the first person who sent me this was Lauren. And this is published, well, at least this particular article, by phys.org, P-H-Y-S, as in physics, phys.org. And the headline is, Bringing Balance to the Universe. New theory could explain missing 95% of the cosmos. Okay. I'm going to read some of this to you. And this is, okay, this is based upon work from the University of Oxford. Scientists at the University of Oxford may have solved one of the biggest questions in modern physics with a new paper unifying dark matter and dark energy into a single phenomenon. A fluid which possesses negative mass. So if you were to push a negative mass, it would accelerate toward you. And this astonishing new theory may also prove right a prediction that Einstein made 100 years ago. So they go on here, of course, to try to explain more to the average person what this is all about. It says, our current widely recognized model of the universe called Lambda CDM, and let me pause for a minute, folks, to tell you what that even means. because lambda, of course, is the Greek, is a Greek letter. And so that represents a cosmological constant. That's just a symbol for there being some kind of a constant force. And CDM means cold dark matter. So they call this theory lambda cold dark matter, just in case that's of interest to you. Because, you know, I know some of you will be wanting to look up more of this on your own. But anyway, it says the current widely recognized model called lambda CDM tells us nothing about what dark matter and dark energy are like physically. We only know about them because of the gravitational effects they have on other observable matter. The new model, published in Astronomy and Astrophysics by Dr. Jamie Farnes from the Oxford E Research Center, Department of Engineering Science, offers a new explanation. He says, quote, "We now think that both dark matter and dark energy can be unified into a fluid which possesses a type of negative gravity, repelling all other material around them. Although this matter is peculiar to us, it suggests that our cosmos is symmetrical in both positive and negative qualities." Well, that part certainly makes sense. So they get into, you know, more details, which I won't go into, but it says here, Albert Einstein provided the first hint. Actually, before I read that part, this is kind of interesting. It says, most galaxies are rotating so rapidly, they should be tearing themselves apart, which suggests that an invisible halo of dark matter must be holding them together. Okay, but so it says Albert Einstein provided the first hint of the dark universe exactly 100 years ago when he discovered a parameter in his equations known as the cosmological constant, which we now know to be synonymous with dark energy. Einstein famously called this his biggest blunder, although modern astrophysical observations prove that it is a real phenomenon. In notes dating back to 1918, Einstein described his cosmological constant, writing that a, quote, modification of the theory is required, such that empty space takes the role of gravitating negative masses, which are distributed all over the interstellar space, end quote. So it's therefore possible that Einstein himself predicted a negative mass-filled universe. Again, I'm going to pause here, so if that sounded too technical, basically what they're saying is that, you know, Einstein 100 years ago was looking at this idea that mass produces this gravitational field that attracts things, and yet he saw that that doesn't seem to be enough to explain every aspect of how all these bodies move around. So he thought at first, well, there must be some kind of other, like, cosmological constant here, some other force. But then that seemed almost like some kind of ad hoc bullshit or whatever. It just seemed too extreme at that time. So he said, that can't be right, you know. Well, turns out they're saying that, you know, everybody agrees that it is true that you can't explain everything just based on what we can see. There is a property amongst what we cannot see, that there is something in the background that is that we are incapable of directly observing, that is actually the most powerful force. This is starting to sound like the force from Star Wars, isn't it? Okay, so I'll read just a little bit more for you. This is the last paragraph. Dr. Farnes says, there are still many theoretical issues and computational simulations to work through, and lambda CDM has a nearly 30-year head start. but I'm looking forward to seeing whether this new version can accurately match, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, if real, it would suggest that the missing 95% of the cosmos had an aesthetic solution. We had forgotten to include a simple minus sign, end quote. So, that's kind of hard to believe, isn't it? Because look at yin-yang. Look at karma. You know, look at the idea that for every action, there's an opposite but equal reaction and all that. It almost makes you feel like cosmologists have not applied that to the big picture. That, you know, it almost gives you the impression, and, you know, I'm certainly no cosmologist or astrophysicist, but it gives you the impression that they've been looking at what's out there in space and only paying attention to the positive forces, because they're like, oh, well, you know, it's in a vacuum, and so there is no negative force. Whereas here on Earth, we have, to a much greater extent, been paying attention to the negative forces. Again, for every action, there's an opposite but equal reaction. This goes back to basic Newtonian physics. And so we sort of acknowledge here in our own little world that it goes both ways. And yet, for some reason, people have not often grasped the concept of as above, so below. That when you look at the big picture, it operates just like the little picture does. The little picture is just a condensation of a condensation, and actually, I think it is a condensation, to be honest with you, on the part of some of these cosmologists and astrophysicists to think that they've been so brilliant by studying the big picture that they could ignore the little picture. So maybe that was a Freudian slip. But no, the idea is that what happens here in our world is to some degree a condensation of what's happening on the larger scale. And what's interesting is, if there actually is that much consistency that we didn't understand between what happens in the cosmos on the big picture and what happens here on the small scale on Earth, well, then it makes you think, well, maybe that trend continues and it goes right down to an even smaller scale, which is the quantum scale. Because quantum physicists have also been rather condescending in many ways, saying, well, if you're smart enough to study this stuff that's really, really small, you're going to understand that there are things that happen there which don't happen on this big scale. But what if there are things that happen in the quantum world that do happen on this scale? And in fact, there has been evidence of this. This has been proven in a number of lab experiments, that things that were only thought at one time to happen in the quantum world are actually happening here at our realm as well, in our range, in our slice of the spectrum. And so what that means is, if you get down to the quantum world, magical things happen. You know, particles can be in two places at once. They can be moving and still at once. They can be in two states, you know, at once. They can teleport. At, you know, they can do all these things, which we're like, well, that's some weird shit that happens at the quantum level, but that's only for the little thing. But maybe what we're finding here more and more is that the distinction that we've made between the quantum world, the little atomic and subatomic things, and the world that you and I live in, this macroscopic world here on the surface of the planet, and then the cosmic world going out there into the solar system and the galaxy and interstellar, maybe what we're finding is we're really not different at all. The only reason that we have believed and perceived that we are different is because that the people studying this stuff are so different from each other. It's kind of like, you know, I watched the beginning of a documentary the other day where there was one scientist saying, well, I'm a microbiologist and I'm about to go meet with a physicist. And hopefully I can understand what he does and hopefully he can understand what I do. But there was this sense like, oh, you know, we're both scientists, we're both experts in our field, but we have very different views of the world. And so it may be that this idea that the quantum world and our experience and what's happening out there in the universe has always been presented so differently, again, is a reflection of the human condition, of the human inability to see the big picture, aside from the reality of how the phenomena work. And if that's the case, this explains a hell of a lot about these very strange experiences that humans have, which we often call paranormal. Because I guarantee you, if you look at some of the really weird stuff happening way out there in space, and you look at some of the really weird stuff happening on this tiny quantum scale, and you apply attributes from either end of that spectrum to the human experience, if these things occurred here within your experience, you would say, what the, that was some paranormal weird stuff I can't explain. Okay. So that's why I believe there's a big practical connection between the things that we are currently calling paranormal and what we're beginning to understand about how the universe works on the large and small levels. But this is, you know, this all may be interesting, and hopefully you find this as fascinating as I think you should. But on the other hand, let's think for a moment about what all this means on a more practical level. And so I want to address something that I have talked about in various ways before, but I'm going to try to, you know, put this in a bit of a nutshell. You know, I'm a big fan of capacitors. I think that fully understanding how a capacitor works is a big key to understanding how the universe is assembled and how energy transfers from one point to another. Now, just to refresh you, a capacitor is a very simple thing. A capacitor is two things that can conduct electricity separated by one thing that is not a conductor or not traditionally a conductor. So to make that even more simple, you tear off a piece of aluminum foil. Okay, that's a conductor. You tear off another piece of aluminum foil, that's a conductor. Okay, you have two pieces of metal here that can conduct electricity. Then you get yourself a piece of plastic, which is a non-conductor. Now, you could call it a dielectric, but that's getting off on too much of a tangent. This piece of plastic is an insulator. You know, that means it's not a good conductor. So if you put one piece of aluminum foil on one side of this piece of plastic and one piece of aluminum foil on the other side of this piece of plastic, you now have a capacitor. Again, all it is two conductors separated by a non-conductor. But the cool thing is, once you do that, if you charge this capacitor, you give it an electrical charge, it stores that up, almost like a battery, and then it discharges it. It goes boom, you know, and then the energy comes out as a spark. And what I find most intriguing about this is, okay, if you, and I did a video about capacitors and how it might relate to Brown Mountain and all that the other day, and the Brown Mountain lights. If you take something like a plastic solo cup, you know, like you drink your beer out of at a party, and you put aluminum foil on the outside of it, well, you almost have a capacitor, right? Because you've got a plastic cup with metal on the outside. But then if you pour something like salt water inside of it, well, now you have a conductor on the inside as well. And so now you have a capacitor. You have a conductor on the inside, conductor on the outside, separated by the plastic, which is the non-conductor between the two. Now, if you charge that thing up using a battery, a Van de Graaff generator, whatever, it'll store up that energy, and then if you connect the inside conductor and the outside conductor, boom, you get a nice little spark. But what's interesting is, you know, just the other day, I bought this little capacitor for like $10 off of eBay, which is great for demonstrations if people are interested in capacitors. And basically, it is a metal cup. It's like an aluminum cup. It's probably about the size of, not even as big as a Solo cup, like a drinking plastic drink. But this is a metal cup. And the metal cup has a plastic cup inside of it. And then that plastic cup has a second metal cup inside of it. So now we have a capacitor, right? Because we have two conductors separated by a non-conductor. You got your metal cup, your plastic cup, and your metal cup. So you can charge this thing up with, like, I like to use my Van de Graaff generator, whatever, but you charge it up, and then you can disassemble it. You know, like, I charged it up, and I pulled the metal cup out of the inside, and I handed that to Lauren. She was hesitant to take it, but I said, I promise, I won't shock. So she got the metal cup, and so we pulled the thing apart and stood there and chatted for a while, and then we put it back together. And then I connected the inner conductor to the outer conductor, and boom, we still got a discharge. Now, what's so interesting about this is a lot of people think of metal and electricity going hand in hand. And so they think, oh, well, if something's metal, it's got an electrical charge. But actually, no, what that shows you is that you can handle and play around with that metal all you want. The charge is being stored in the non-conductor because all the metal does is allow the electricity or the charge to just flow, to just go. That's why it's called a conductor. It conducts it. It lets it flow. And so what you find is that the charge is actually being held in the non-conductor. It seems and sounds counterintuitive. I actually know a scientist who took this experiment to an extreme. He got two pieces of aluminum foil and a flat piece of plastic, just like I was talking about. He put one piece of foil on one side of the plastic, the other piece of foil on the other side of the plastic. He charged the thing up. Then he peeled one piece of aluminum foil off. He put it in an envelope. Then he peeled the other piece of aluminum foil off and he put it in an envelope. And then he took the plastic and he put it in an envelope. So now he has three envelopes. He's completely disassembled this thing. He mailed each envelope to three different people who lived in the same neighborhood. They were all researchers. And everybody got their envelope. It probably took them, I don't know, a couple days to get the thing in the mail. And then they all got together and they reassembled it and then connected the two sheets of aluminum foil with a little wire. And guess what? Bang, discharge. That whole time, amazingly enough, that capacitor still held the charge even though it was disassembled. Now, again, we know that the charge is being stored in that non-conductor, which is between the two conductive plates. So the amazing thing is to think about the reality that a capacitor will work in a vacuum. There are even capacitors that are called vacuum capacitors, where you have a vacuum, basically it's a vacuum tube, I mean a true vacuum, and you have these two metal plates inside the capacitor. And it still functions as a great capacitor. Nikola Tesla sort of pioneered this in the 1800s. Okay, so if we know that the charge that is stored in a capacitor is not being stored in the metal plates, but in the space between them. And we know that a capacitor will still work even in a vacuum when there's not one measurable physical particle between those two plates. Well, then where's the charge being stored? Well, obviously the point here is that the charge is being stored in some aspect of space itself. That there may not be anything in that vacuum that we can measure, but there's still something there. And whatever that something is capable of storing a charge. And if we can understand that exact relationship between those plates and what's between them, then we might be able to suddenly envision all of the universe as a medium which is able to store and release a charge. So in other words, any point in the space around you could almost function like a battery. Now that's important because that's probably how these flying saucers are able to travel around. They're not carrying a big heavy bank of batteries with them in order to power their saucer. They're somehow extracting their power supply directly from the space around them. But furthermore, knowing that our entire environment has this sort of potential supply of power just sort of sitting there means that under certain circumstances, when that is discharged, it could create other strange phenomena, like allowing a ghostly sort of manifestation to occur. Or maybe creating a burst like the kind we see in the Bermuda Triangle, which would damage an airplane or a ship or cause a disappearance or create some missing time experience. You know, the idea that space-time around you is in and of itself a gigantic potential capacitor, basically, and that under certain circumstances you get a discharge from that capacitor that can create some profound effects may give us a whole different view of what reality is, how it functions, and how that if we are able to grasp that and tap into it, then we may be able to have completely efficient, efficient, reliable, infinite, for human purposes, power freely, for forever, you know. So that's the practical part of studying this, of trying to understand it. You know, again, it's one thing to look out there into the vastness of space and think of that as some foreign alien land where things behave in a different manner. It's another thing to start thinking about how tapping into this could allow you to be able to function without having to pay the bills that you pay right now, or be able to travel in a brand new way, or, you know, experience the world in a brand new way. And I think that's ultimately the pragmatic value in doing paranormal research, if it's done from a truly open-minded scientific point of view. Sorry if that seemed a little too technical for some folks, but look, you know, that's why I do this thing every single day, or at least try to, because I have the opportunity to sometimes talk to certain types of people and then talk to other types of people because I have a lot of different interests, and this is one of those days when I feel it's, you know, it's appropriate to dig into that that connection between ourselves as humans and the bigger picture with what's happening in the cosmos. Well, as you know, I am quite busy over the coming days. I'll be heading out of town in just a few days and going to this epic meeting in Wisconsin with Charles Casamano, with Tom Vrilock, with Dr. Mulder, and I must say that it's so ironic that so much of the South is getting hit with a snowstorm over the coming days, because, you know, I was concerned about making the trip up there this time of year and how we might get some bad weather. And so I said first off to these guys, if we're going to do this, please use whatever strategies, whatever magic, whatever machines you have in order to help facilitate nice weather for this experience. And the weather is going to be beautiful. It's going to be cold, but it's going to be clear. And so isn't it funny how I'm going to be traveling up to the northern part of the U.S. and the weather's going to be great, but then down south, where you usually expect it to be warmer, they're going to possibly be in the middle of a record-breaking blizzard. So maybe that's just the very first sign of how things are going to go for our meeting among, shall I say, mad scientists and magicians, the League of Extraordinary Occultists, perhaps. Anyway, I can't wait to share more with you about this over the next few days, but I know you'll forgive me if this makes my podcast recording a bit more erratic. But I always try to give you links to the things that I talk about. If you follow me on Twitter, I'll put a link to, I mentioned it, you know, the random event generator, also this article that I'm talking about. You should definitely follow me on Twitter at Joshua P. Warren. Definitely subscribe to my free e-newsletter. And what is this? It's still early enough in December that if you want to get something truly exotic and amazing and limited and rare as a Christmas gift, if you go to joshuapwarren.com, joshuapwarren.com, click the link to the Curiosity Shop. If you buy anything from the Curiosity Shop, we guarantee you will have it well in time for Christmas. And so go there and at least look at what I've got for you, and you'll find it's stuff that you're not going to discover anywhere else on the internet. So while you're at joshuapwarren.com, click the link to this podcast, Joshua P. Warren Daily, always short, always free, totally independent, and you can subscribe through various means, or if you follow me on Twitter, at Joshua P. Warren, I will tweet when a new one is available. So there are many more astounding updates to come over the next week. I assure you of that. I will do my best to keep you and take you on this trip with me as I go to the United Nations of the esoteric. I don't know what's going to happen, but we'll find out together. So that's it for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest and support. Thank you for staying curious. And I will talk to you again soon.